You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hi, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 118. Today's episode is a Q&A show where we answer questions from listeners like you. If you'd like to submit a question for a future Q&A show, you have two options. One, you can join our totally free Facebook group, the Beyond Bourbon Street crew. The other option is to become a patron of the show by contributing a few dollars a month to support us. Patrons get their questions answered first when we do these episodes. The last episode was about the 64 parishes of Louisiana. I was joined by Aaron Greenwald, who's the editor-in-chief of 64 Parishes magazine. We talked about the various cultures, food, traditions, history, and challenges all through the lens of Louisiana geography. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. Aaron is such a wealth of information. The magazine she puts together, 64 Parishes, is terrific, and I just love talking to her. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. Today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, the Instagram feed, and or the work that I'm doing in general, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. Find out more at beyondbourbonst.com/Patreon, and we'll also have a link to it in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/118. A few dollars a month really helps me continue to share my lens of New Orleans with you. And if you pledge $10 or more per month, we'll mention you on the show, like Jennifer Dawson, Mercedes Frazier, Terry Lynn, Joseph Griot, Jenny Ross, Monica Bechtold, Michael Kaufman, Randy Baker, John LaRue, and Laurie Shaw, who was also a former guest on the podcast a couple years ago when we did a show about visiting New Orleans as a solo traveler. There's more coming in all the time, and so you can expect to hear those names on future shows. Thanks to all 10 of those folks, plus the many others who contributed at $5 a month for supporting me. We're in the midst of a challenge to get to 100 patrons. And when we do, we're going to do something special that all patrons will get to take part in, regardless of contribution amount. So again, if you're interested in that, check it out over in the show notes. We're also sponsored today by our Beyond Bourbon Street partners, NOLA Boards, Coast Roast Coffee, and NOLA T-Shirt Club of the Month. Again, head on over to the show notes for today's episode to find links and discount codes. And if you're a member of the Facebook group, you'll often see pictures of me in the morning drinking my coffee. Often drinking Coast Roast coffee out of a Coast Roast mug with a NOLA T-shirt of the month shirt, and sometimes with a really cool triangular-shaped cutting board from NOLA Boards that they call the Marigny Board. The Marigny Triangle, of course, is a neighborhood just outside of the French Quarter. So take a look. Really good people, really good companies, organizations that I've partnered with because I think that they are a good fit for you. So check them out. As I mentioned earlier, questions for today's episode were submitted by members of the Beyond Bourbon Street Facebook crew, our free Facebook community, which has over 6,500 members now, and from our patrons. So let's dive in and see what we've got. I only look at these as I'm cutting and pasting them into my notes, so you're going to get my answers on the fly. First up is a question from Dan Tamura, who's a patron. Hey, Mark, I hope all's well and that you're prepared for the looming storms. He's talking about, as I'm recording this, there were two storms in the Gulf of Mexico. One is Hurricane Marco, which has fizzled out by now, and the second is Hurricane Laura, which looks pretty intense. And now, as I record this late on a Tuesday evening, looks like it's probably headed towards our friends in Lafayette, Lake Charles, and Beaumont and Houston, as opposed to New Orleans. But anyway, Dan says, I was just wondering if you knew anything about the future plans for the House of Dance and Feathers, now that sadly Mr. Ronald Lewis has passed on. Way back, I think in episode 13, I did a whole episode about the Mardi Gras Indians. And for that one, I interviewed, not on air, but I interviewed Ronald Lewis. Mr. Lewis lived in the Ninth Ward, and behind his home was the House of Dance and Feathers, an amazing, basically two-room museum that was an ode to all things Mardi Gras. And while it focused in large part on the Mardi Gras Indian culture, he had artifacts and stories and information about all kinds of parts of Mardi Gras and all different Mardi Gras organizations, including the Cajun Mardi Gras. He was a member of a Jewish Mardi Gras organization. He was a member of a Skull and Bones gang. He was a member of at least one Mardi Gras Indian tribe. And mostly what made the House of Dance and Feathers special was Ronald. Mr. Lewis just had so much information and so much love for all the various parts of Mardi Gras. I looked into it a little bit, Dan, and it seems like it's kind of on hold. I'm not sure what's going to become of it. The Backstreet Cultural Museum in the Treme is probably the closest thing to it in New Orleans. And it's similar and it's different. I hope that someone takes on the mantle and carries it on. But what's lost is Ronald Lewis, and he's really what made it special. The artifacts are certainly unique, and it was neat that you kind of had to make an appointment. It was behind his house. You would just make a donation and show up, and you could sit for an afternoon if he had time and you had time and just talk about anything carnival in New Orleans related, and sadly that's gone. There is a book that was written, co-written by him, and it was edited. I forget the name right now. I think I talked about it on another episode. But if you look on Amazon or on any of the local bookshops here in New Orleans, The House of Dance and Feathers, it's a really interesting book, and it's largely told through his words. So that might be the best that you can do. It's also a good reminder to sort of enjoy the things that are unique in New Orleans and in your own neighborhoods and communities now, because they're unique, and often they are led by one or two people with a real passion for a topic, and when they're gone, they're gone. Let's see, our second question comes from Sean B., also a patron. What is there to do in a normal year, quote-unquote, in Algiers? Well, we did an earlier episode about Algiers Point a couple years ago. It was episode 30, and if I remember, I'll put a link to it in the show notes for tonight. But we did that one and kind of talked about a bunch of things over there. Algiers Point is right across the river. It's the second oldest neighborhood in New Orleans. Off the top of my head, walking on the river on that side is wonderful. You get the breeze. You're right in the bend in the river, so you see the river traffic and you hear the horns and the noise and all of that and the birds. It's a great place to watch the river traffic. When the river is really high, it's interesting how close it is to the top of the levee, and when the river level is really low, sometimes there's even a sandbar on that side. And so you can, you know, essentially walk out into the river, which is pretty amazing. Up on top of that same levee is what they call the Jazz Walk of Fame, and so there are plaques, and there might be a couple statues of various jazz musicians, and there used to be, and I think I mentioned it in episode 30, maybe in the show notes, there was an informal jazz tour you could take, like a self-guided tour, where you could see some of the houses in Algiers Point where some of the early pioneers of jazz music lived. Let's see what else. I really love to take the passenger ferry that goes from the foot of Canal Street over to Algiers. It's $1.25 a person each way. Unfortunately, it has been closed off and on and mostly off for the better part of the last year or so. I don't fully understand it. They bought new boats to replace the old ferries, and then somehow they couldn't certify that the new ferries were river worthy. I don't know how that happens. It feels like a very New Orleans thing. But that was a big part of the charm, being able to go from downtown, the French Quarter, the Warehouse District, and hop on at the foot of Canal Street and cross over to Algiers Point. So absent the ferries, you have to get across the bridge, the Mississippi River Bridge. But the other thing that's really great about being over there and being on the levees is the photography. So if you're a photographer, you get these great views looking back at the French Quarter and at the city. It's great for still photography. You get the traffic if you want to do video. And I am a relatively new owner of a drone. And if you like to fly drones, there are great views from that side. both in terms of the river and downtown New Orleans, the French Quarter, but also sometimes you'll see great pictures between the spans of the Crescent Connection of the Mississippi River bridges, and those are usually taken from that side. So that's pretty neat. Again, whether it's a still photograph or it's video or drone photography. There's a lot of interesting houses there, a lot of Victorian architecture on that side, lots of colorful houses. My guest on episode 30, when we talked all about Algiers, was a man named Mark Rosenbaum, who owns Rose Tree Blown Glass Studio. Mark makes incredible blown glass that you can purchase there or online. He doesn't do it right now during COVID, but he was doing hands-on, where you could go in and do a class and produce a work of art, working with him, actually spinning the hot metal pokers through the glass and then firing them in the ovens. I think that now he has some sort of program where you can go and kind of pick out what you want, but because of COVID right now in 2020, you're not able to put hands-on and actually participate in it. But Mark makes amazing work, and that's definitely worth stopping in. If you want to have a drink, the two places that I recommend, and I don't know what their status is right now, but typically the Crown and Anchor, as you would expect, it's a British pub. You have to enter through a blue police box, which looks very much like the ubiquitous red phone booths of England, except it's a blue police box. So that's how you get in. There's also the Old Point Bar, which is kind of a dive bar that has better than you would expect food and live music almost every night. Although, again, certainly not right now. But your question, I think, was in a normal year, and that would be a way to go. Another place over there is a little family-owned pizza place called Tavolino Pizza, or Tavolino's. Great pizza, great owners, nice people, good family place. So that's a bunch of things there. It's a good spot to spend an afternoon, Algiers Point, and just wander around. If you watch anything on TV that shows New Orleans, I think about like Monday Night Football, the views that they show of the city, they typically will show them like at nighttime views, looking back across the river. Those photos are almost always taken from that vantage point at the turn in the river there from Algiers Point. A lot to explore. It's a quiet neighborhood in terms of just getting to wander around and really just kind of soak up the architecture and some of the little businesses over there. So that's a great question and a fun spot. And again, if you want to enjoy Algiers Point from afar, episode 30 of the podcast, so way back in the archives, is a good place to do it. Thanks for the question, Sean. Let's see. Many of these questions are coming from patrons, which I love. And again, we put those first. Chris Marshall, who's a patron and a friend. What's been your favorite revelation about New Orleans during COVID? What's been your favorite revelation about New Orleans during COVID stay-at-home restrictions? Have you found anything new or looked at the city or an aspect of the city in a new way? I wish I had read these questions ahead of time, Chris. That's a really good question. What's been my favorite revelation? I think it is taking the time. So you can't, I really miss going out to dinner, going out for drinks, socializing with people. I'm a very big introvert, but I have a close circle of friends, including Chris and his wife, Jen, and I miss those interactions. I feel like, and probably all throughout the country and all throughout the world, I feel like, so I've been fortunate enough to travel to Europe several times. And while I love it, it gets tiring after a certain period of time because I feel like you have to think about everything. You know, in my head, you have to translate the language. You have to think about where to go, what to get, how it works. And I sort of feel like that's the way it is right now with COVID, that you really, everything requires thought, right? Do you have a mask? Is it open? I can't take a drink. Oddly, New Orleans seems to be the only place in America right now where you can't get a to-go drink, whereas typically New Orleans is the one place in the United States where you can always get a to-go drink. But my favorite revelation, I think it is having to slow down and appreciate the things in solitude. And so what I mean by that, Chris, is I'm spending more time on my bike as I'm recovering from knee surgery, walking around, not being in such a rush because there's not as much to do in terms of we're not going out to dinner, for instance, but really trying to just appreciate the things about New Orleans, the architecture, the history. You know, I think it's also made me really appreciate the many different ways that people are impacted in this city. You know, so much of our city is driven by tourism and by that economy, and so many people have been so badly harmed and impacted by that. And of course, I knew that. I have a podcast about New Orleans. About 70% of those of you listening don't live in New Orleans. And yet, when all of that dries up, people are badly affected, and it's real people. And as much as I know that many, many listeners miss coming to New Orleans, there are people whose lives are really being destroyed by not having you come visit. So I think that, well, maybe not favorite, Chris, that has been a striking revelation to me. You see it in real terms. I think in terms of favorite, it's the, we always talk about New Orleans being resilient, but I think it's the finding different ways to enjoy the city, whether it's out for a walk or the places that are doing takeout in such a good way. Brightson's just reopened doing takeout, one of my favorite upscale restaurants in the city, and Chef Frank found a way to do it. Blue Oak Barbecue. I know you don't think of barbecue when it comes to New Orleans, but Blue Oak Barbecue on Carrollton Avenue has done a fabulous job with it. Barracuda, a little fresh taco place, is set up for it. Fiorella's, the po' boy shop in what used to be Teddy's Grill in the space where I grew up in my family's restaurant, doing a really good job. And so I think my favorite revelation has been seeing the ways that people have adapted and made the best of it and tried to have some measure of normalcy and some measure of fun. The hard part, as I mentioned, is seeing the really stark impact on people. And also, and maybe more in this in a future episode, this idea of how do we do something that's more than just tourism? And for those of you that do love the city, how do we help you experience New Orleans even when you can't be here? And I would say the same is true for any place that you love and aren't able to go. And let's see, the second part of your question, let's see if I answered that. Have you found anything new or looked at the city or an aspect of the city in a new way? Again, I think I mentioned that, just the impact and what does that mean in the real world and how do we adjust? And then on a personal level, how do I adjust the podcast? How do I adjust my business in terms of how do I provide something that is useful and fun and educational for people when you can't do the things that we're all used to? So thanks, Chris. Number four comes from Adrian Hickman, a brand new patron. I'm super curious what the drama, air quotes, was about. Absolutely love the podcast. Thank you very much. And the drama I think she's talking about is the last podcast was very late. That was episode 117, 64 Parishes with Aaron Greenwald. And so the drama was that I've done almost every one of my 100-plus episodes in person. When I talk to someone, I really love going to meet someone where they want to meet. It gets me into different parts of New Orleans. I think it helps put the guest at ease, particularly if they haven't spent much time talking on a microphone. Sometimes we're outside and you get the background noise, or we're in a restaurant, whatever it might be. I enjoy that. I also really appreciate the nonverbal cues that you get when you're sitting across from someone, and I think it can help put them at ease. You know, for instance, a lot of times I talk to someone and they're nervous, so they start tapping their fingers or they're curling the cord of the microphone or tapping on the microphone or pounding on the table a little bit to make a point. And if I'm face to face, I can sort of, you know, wave to the person or sometimes even grab their hand and sort of like, hey, you know, take a deep breath. And I miss that. And now, given the reality of COVID, I have to record remotely. And I had only done that a couple of times in 116 shows. And the episode with Aaron doesn't live that far from me. And in fact, I had actually done an episode with her on the 300th anniversary of New Orleans face-to-face at the Historic New Orleans Collection. But this time we had to do it remotely, and we were using a technology where I could see her. So it wasn't Zoom, but it was similar where I could see her, but I was getting a separate audio feed. And for reasons I don't understand, the audio feed got messed up, and it was supposed to have a continuous backup, and the continuous backup was kind of a mess. And so after about a week and a half of working with the small business owner, who has a great business, he got me the files, but then there was drift, which means that Aaron's audio and my audio didn't line up. And in some cases, there were some cutouts. It was just kind of a mess. And while I've been editing audio for 5 years, I'd not quite had that challenge. And of course, all of the things that are just harder now, right? With COVID and life, it just seems like so many things in our everyday lives just are harder or take more effort. And so trying to do that on top of it just kind of all snowballed on me. The good side of that is it has made me realize that just like you all are looking for a different way to enjoy New Orleans until you can come and enjoy it in person, I'm going to have to adjust. So I'm going to build out a more permanent studio at home that is designed for remote recording and broadcasting and editing and all of that. And I'm going to learn some new technologies, and I'm going to use a mixer and find the best, whether it's the company I was using or something else, and I'll learn from it. But it was exhausting. So typically when I record a show with a guest, it takes me 2 to 4 hours to do all the post work. So make sure it all sounds good, get rid of most of the ums and ahs. If we had just a piece that wasn't that interesting, take that out. All of those things, put the music in, the intro and the exit, all of that stuff. It might take me, if I'm really fast, if it's just me and there's no guest, I can do it in 30 minutes. If there's a guest, it might be 2 to 4 hours. This last one took 15 to 20 hours. So that's a lot of drama in my life. It caused me to be really late, which I'm not happy about, but that's the way it goes, right? The show must go on. You figure it out and we'll do better going forward. So thanks for that. Next up is from Lisa Johnson, again, a patron. Thank you. Be honest. Be honest. Do you love New Orleans better with no tourists? The short answer is no. I think that like any city with tourists, there are times when you may get a little frustrated. Maybe if tourists don't quite get it or understand or, you know, whatever it might be. But New Orleans and New Orleanians love to share our love of the city, right? Just like we do here on the podcast. It's why we created the Facebook community. It wasn't so much for me, but people kept wanting to interact and engage and share their love and their stories about New Orleans. And to me, I love exploring the city, and I love exploring the city by myself. As I mentioned, I'm an introvert, but it is a fascinating thing to explore the city through the lens of a tourist. When you meet somebody at Mardi Gras who's never been and it's their first parade or their first time here in the city, it is a fabulous experience as a native because you just see the delight, the shock, the sort of sensory overload. It's the same thing when you see or get to talk to a visitor at Jazz Fest who's eating, I don't know, a Natchitoches meat pie for the first time, or crawfish sacks, or Loretta's stuffed praline beignets, or crawfish bread, or whatever it might be. Somebody enjoying a snowball for the first time. So while I love my city, no matter the condition, I do miss the tourists. I also miss the money that it brings. You know, so many people here don't have a lot of money and depend on tourism. And I think that's something we need to figure out, but I miss it for that reason. But no, I enjoy tourists. In my day job, I work downtown in the Central Business District, very, very close to the Hyatt and the Superdome. And so often I go off for lunch or go take a walk. And invariably, I can't go more than 2 blocks without seeing someone either by themselves or a couple staring at a phone or a map trying to figure out something. And it's really fun to stop and say, hey, can I help you? What are you looking for? You know, what do you need? And I often see other people doing it. And so New Orleans is a wonderful city. I think it's better with tourists. So no, honestly, I miss the fact that we don't have tourists right now. Good question, though. Thank you. Let's see. Question number 6 comes from Shannon Bertolio. What's the biggest misconception about New Orleans that locals wish would go away? Well, given that my podcast is called Beyond Bourbon Street, certainly my biggest pet peeve was thinking that New Orleans and Bourbon Street are synonymous. If you have been a longtime listener, you've now, this is the 118th episode where I've tried to share with you all the ways that New Orleans is more than Bourbon Street. And even the episode we did about Bourbon Street with Richard Campanella, I think probably shattered a lot of myths about the street itself. The biggest of which is that it's largely residential. So I think that's probably it. I think that people see this as like a party town, and it's Bourbon Street, and it's smelly, and it's all of that. And that part of it, I can't argue with. I would argue that a lot of that is tourist-driven. That's sort of the image that people have, and some people, that's what they want when they come, and, you know, I understand that. But New Orleans is a place where we live, where we raise families, we have jobs, we exercise, we celebrate life, we live life. And I think that, and if you're listening to the show, obviously, you get that. It's a place that's so much more than the surface. There's so many layers to New Orleans. The people are friendly and welcoming and want to tell their stories. And it's just so much more than Bourbon Street. And even Bourbon Street is more than the Bourbon Street people see on TV once a year at Mardi Gras. So that, to me, is probably the one. You know, I could almost do a whole show about misconceptions, and maybe I will. So, good question. Next up, Joe Giovannoli. As someone who does not live in New Orleans, what are the best local charities and community organizations to consider donating to? Can be related to COVID relief efforts for hospitality, retail workers, or mainstay charity organizations. Thanks, Mark. Wow, Joe, that's a really good question. I won't get that into the show notes because I want to release this tomorrow, but I'll add it at some point. Certainly, food banks, Second Harvest, not only here, but in your own community. I would really encourage you to support local. There's certainly a need here. There are several musicians' funds. I'm trying to think. If you go to Offbeat Magazine, they have a resource, I think, WWOZ, terrific radio station. I think they have some resources there. I will look at that when I can. I won't get that into the show notes tonight. But people are hurting, and people are probably hurting in your community too. There's a Catholic church in our neighborhood, and it has a little red box. It looks like a little free library, but much bigger. And it is a food pantry where you can go and stock it. And the kids and I, we have slacked off a little bit. We need to get back to it. We were filling it every couple days. And when I say filling it, we were putting 10 to 20 items in it 2 to 3 days a week. And by the next morning, it was empty, and we were posting it on Nextdoor and on my social media, and so other people were doing it. And there's just such a need that we don't see, right, face-to-face. And so while I certainly appreciate, and again, Offbeat Magazine, because it's focused on musicians, WWOZ, again, Guardians of the Groove, very focused on music, Second Harvest, I think there's just so much need, right? Not only here, but in your community too. So I'd encourage you to look at that. I'd also encourage you to think local, wherever local is for you. People are really hurting. People need the basics, you know, food, rent help, those kind of things. Next up, Michelle Minotti. How do locals feel about Tulane and Loyola students, both in general and now with COVID-19? Well, I live less than a mile from Loyola and Tulane. I am married to a Tulane grad, though admittedly she graduated many, many years ago. So I have to say I love her and I love Tulane and Loyola. I love the campuses. I love the youthfulness that we're not exactly a college town, but that this neighborhood has. There are many listeners that listen to the show because their children go to Tulane or that they are graduates of Tulane or Loyola. I should say go to Tulane or Loyola. Both schools are terrific with long histories. Loyola produces many fine journalists, among others, but I'm thinking of journalists here in New Orleans. Tulane, great programs all across the board. Richard Campanella, who's been on a guest on the show, is a professor at Tulane. Sally Asher, who's been a guest on the show, works at Tulane. I think it's great. I think the kids that go to Tulane, it's fun to see them enjoy the city and become a part of the city. It's a lot of fun when you go to the parades during Mardi Gras that go down St. Charles, and afterwards they don't pass. They pass about a mile on St. Charles Avenue, but about a mile from the front of Loyola and Tulane, which both front on St. Charles Avenue. And so one of my favorite things to do on the Monday night before Mardi Gras is to go park a car there late so that we'll have a space Mardi Gras morning, but I run home, and my run takes me along St. Charles Avenue and then through the campuses. And it's so much fun to see the kids enjoying themselves, you know, in costumes and, of course, having some drinks and just celebrating and enjoying what we do all the time here in New Orleans. I am, having said that, very, very concerned from a COVID perspective. The students came back in the last couple of weeks, and they're kids, right? And so they're out in groups. Often they're kind of clustered tight together. There's a bar that has been on the campus of Tulane for at least 40, 50 years, maybe longer. They have outdoor seating because of the restrictions, and they serve food so they can do it. But the other day it was packed. You know, the kids sitting out in front of the frat houses and sorority houses, it's packed. And again, on the one hand, these are kids. And I think back to when I was 17, 18, 19 years old in college, it would be hard, right? But I worry that we're going to get these clusters because these kids are being kids, you know, and they're being kids in New Orleans, which means that there's a tendency to be a lot of alcohol and a lot of gathering. And, you know, we celebrate life. And I think that's part of the appeal of coming to a school like Tulane or Loyola. So typically I love it. I love the vibrancy. I've gotten to do some speaking and some engagement at both Tulane and Loyola about communications and about the podcast and history and that sort of thing. And I really enjoy it. So I love the fact we have the campuses. I love the fact that we get to live close to them. But I'm sort of terrified in terms of COVID. You've seen, you know, in other major college cities, these outbreaks and clusters. And again, I get it. They're kids, right? And no matter what you say as a parent, you send your kid off to school, particularly in a place like New Orleans, they're going to enjoy themselves. They're going to feel a lot of pressure. And look, there's a lot of kids, I think, trying to follow the rules and trying to do the best they can. But it's also this exciting point in their lives, right? And so I have really mixed feelings. I mean, I do love them. I love what they bring to New Orleans. I love that so many kids come to school in New Orleans and either make it home or have these fabulous memories that someday they will share with their family and their kids. And my wife's a great example of it. She's not from New Orleans. She came as a teenager to Tulane. She stayed. You know, and I met her many years after college, so I'm very thankful for that. And we know lots of people that live all over the place that either came to Tulane or Loyola or now have kids. I think of Ellen Byron in the community, in the Facebook group, and also an author who has a great series of mystery novels set in New Orleans. She has a daughter here at, I'm going to say Loyola, and I hope I got that right, Ellen. I'm guessing Loyola because of the journalism and writing background. I'm super excited for her. And at the same time, again, you know, it's college kids. So complicated answer, I think, but that's how I feel. John Nordyke, with football season looming, maybe, in air quotes, will you and I have another wager for the Christmas Day matchup? Speaking of the Saints, what does the team really mean for New Orleans? And I still owe you that beer. I'm well aware that you still owe me that beer, John. And in fact, the next question is also about beer. The Saints mean a ton to New Orleans. The Saints were lovable losers for most of my first 40 years, 35 years of life. They were a terrible football team, but people still love them. One of my earliest and most endearing memories is sitting with my maternal grandfather, my papa, listening to, we would watch the game on TV, and we would listen on a transistor radio to the broadcast from WWL Radio. And for whatever reason, more often than not, I remember heartbreaking losses to the Rams and the Falcons. But the Saints have always meant a lot to the city. You can definitely feel the difference in New Orleans on a Monday morning when the Saints win versus when the Saints lose. The energy around it. We're not season ticket holders. We go to maybe a game a year, but certainly know a lot of people that are. Sometimes you can hear the roar in the neighborhood of people watching TV. The ratings that they get locally are crazy high. Like, I think it's something like sometimes 87% of the televisions in New Orleans are tuned to Saints games. They mean a ton. And when, you know, post-Katrina, all the things that happened, and then a couple years later, you know, Drew Brees comes in and Sean Payton, and the culture really changes when Sean Payton gets here, and then when they win the Super Bowl. And of course, now that's been a decade, but they mean a tremendous amount to New Orleans. I am skeptical that we'll get through a season. You know, we have no preseason or very limited preseason at best. At a minimum, the first game is going to be without fans. I expect that will be the case. You know, maybe, I have no idea. I don't have a crystal ball. I think the NBA, and sorry for those of you that aren't sports fans, but the NBA has managed to do it brilliantly, putting everyone in a bubble and creating these scenes that when you watch it on TV, it's exciting, and it's really, they have made it work with the lack of a crowd. I think that's harder still with the NFL. But the Saints mean a ton. I hope we have football, but I want those players and all of the support workers to be safe. And it's also another, you know, we're talking about tourism. The number of people that work in the Superdome and the Smoothie King Center for concerts and Saints games and Tulane games, the absence of those games or the absence of those games with fans is tremendous on people, people that work security and sell hot dogs and beer and all that stuff. That has a huge impact on the city. And so, you know, I think what the Saints mean to New Orleans has many levels, right? It's a shared love of something. I do think they've done a great job, really in the Sean Payton era, of bringing in people of character. And when they have had down seasons, often you can look back and say they made some personnel decisions that maybe they didn't have the best characters, but they come back to that over and over and over. You know, lots of talk about Drew Brees, and it's well-deserved. But you look at guys like Michael Thomas and Cam Jordan and Alvin Kamara and Teddy Bridgewater these last couple years, and you know, he leaves and he goes to Carolina, but good on him. Seemed like just such a good presence in the locker room. And this year we're going to have Jameis Winston as a backup, who had sort of, you know, mixed success in Tampa, and people question that, but I think he's going to thrive here because of the environment. You know, and what players find when they come here, much like Tulane and Loyola students, is that the city's welcoming. you know, and so many players live in the city. Or I think Teddy Bridgewater famously rode a bike to Saints games, and Alvin Kamara lived, I don't know if he still does, but he lived either in the French Quarter or the Central Business District, very, very close to the Dome. So it means a ton. I hope we have football, but I only want to have football if it's safe for the players and the and all of the support personnel. And yeah, you owe me a beer. So, you know, you need to get down here and make good on that. Last but not least, Matt May. Matt was a guest on the show way back. We did a thing with he and Chad Almquist about Canoe and Trail, a really great local company that takes you out into the bayous of Louisiana. But Matt says, any new beer discoveries? I love seeing all the small breweries doing weekly special releases. I've been able to get my hands on a couple. You know, I feel like New Orleans was late to the craft beer scene. And again, we did an early episode on craft beer and we need to do an update. Hint, hint, Mr. Chris Marshall, you need to help me out with that. Yeah, I have enjoyed quite a few. On the one hand, I am drinking less because I am in the midst of losing weight. I'm down about 22 pounds since the middle of May. But I haven't stopped drinking. I've just been more curated in my drinking experience. I really like the beer from Cajun Fire Brewing. It's a black-owned brewery in New Orleans East. I find it's hard to find sometimes, although it's contract brewed out of Sterling, Virginia. So if you're in that Northern Virginia, D.C. area, you might be able to find it. They make a Big Chief Cream Stout that's good. They make a Honey Ale that's good. I recently came across a, I don't have it in front of me, I think it's called First Pitch Brewing out of Baton Rouge. And they have, I might screw this up. I think it's called First Pitch Brewing and the beer was Batters Up. But it is like a hazy New England style IPA, except it's not an IPA. It's a pale ale. So what that means, I think, is it's a little less bitter and it is lower alcohol. So it's, I think, about 5%, 5.7%. And of course, some IPAs these days will get up 7, 8%. Really, really a good beer. I bought it because I liked the logo and I was looking for a pale ale to drink while watching baseball. And it just sort of hooked me with the can, but I really like that one. Dixie Beer. Dixie is making terrific beer right now. And there was all this complaint recently about, and I'm going to get on a soapbox here for a moment. There's all this complaint about Dixie has decided to change their name. And people flipped out and said, well, I'm never going to drink their beer again. And in my mind, I'm thinking most of the people saying that probably haven't had Dixie beer in 20, 30 years. The original Dixie beer wasn't a great beer. I remember my papa drinking it. And I remember tasting it as a kid because that's what you did. It just wasn't that good a beer. It was okay. You know, it wasn't great. It was just okay. And when they brought it back a couple years ago, it was contract brewed in Wisconsin. And it was good. I mean, it was, you know, it's a lager. It's fine for hot summer days. But everybody griping about the name, first of all, people like to say, well, Dixie refers to D or Dix, the Confederate notes, or the based on the French word, a Dix or a D, I don't know how to say it, D-I-X, was a piece of currency. And so, you know, we're taking away our history. Except the fallacy of that with Dixie beer is that Dixie beer was created in 1917, I think. It wasn't named after the note. It was named in a post-Reconstruction Jim Crow era. And so Dixie connotated, I'm not saying that they did it with any racist undertones, I don't know, but it was referring to Dixie as in the Old South, which kind of gets to that lost cause sort of mentality. It was not created named after the note. There's nowhere in their history on their own website that talks about that. Nonetheless, businesses change. They want to change the name, change the name. The beer they're making right now is the best beer they've ever made. They made a Datsuma, which was a Satsuma using local produce, an IPA. That was excellent. They made a double IPA version of it too. They had a strong ale, which was about 10%, so it is strong, really delicious beer. They have right now what they're calling a Voodoo Little IPA. Again, it's sort of, to me, Chris Marshall, who is a Cicerone and is certified in beer, could explain this to me better, but it feels to me like it's a hybrid sort of right in between ale and IPA. Their beer's really good right now. And so I think, you know, all these people saying they're not drinking it, great, don't drink it if you're so upset about a name. But my guess is most people haven't had the beer in a while. Urban South, my one gripe with Urban South is they put out, it feels like 15 beers a week, so I can't keep up with it. They have some really great beers. Our friend Eli Haddo, who used to own Ferret Beer Room, is over at NOLA, not Eli Haddo, I'm confusing Eli's, sorry about that. But there are two Eli's, one that now works at NOLA Brewing and one that works at the Historic New Orleans Collection and has worked with us a bunch. Sorry, Eli's, for confusing the two of you. But NOLA Brewing always has some interesting beers. I love the beer, the beers made at Miel, which is a very small brewery. They tend to specialize in sours and fruit beers. And the other one that I've enjoyed recently are the beers from Brew Caray. So Brew Caray is just inside the Marigny, just across Esplanade from the French Quarter. I should also mention Dorada. So Port Orleans Brewing has made their version of a Mexican lager called Dorada. So it's a Corona-ish beer. It's really good on a hot summer day. It was good earlier in the season with crawfish. I have found quite a few beer discoveries, and it feels like as late as New Orleans was to craft beer, there are plenty now. And then again, as you expand out to the rest of Louisiana, there's a bunch. That reminds me, again, a quick little plug for Chris Marshall, has a YouTube channel and a Facebook community called Beer Bearings, where he talks about New Orleans beers. So that's a great place to go discover and talk about New Orleans beers and Louisiana beers. And we need to do an update on craft beers, and I'll get Chris on the show, and we'll sit down and talk about the state of beer in New Orleans and in Louisiana right now. So that's a bunch, I hope, Matt. I want to go try Royal Brewery, which is out at the Lakefront Airport, or very close to the Lakefront Airport. Small brewery. I want to get my hands on some of their beer and try that. And I live very, very close to Zony Mash, and they do a lot of mashups and collaborations. And so they put out some interesting beers as well. I hope that helps, Matt. I would love to hear what you're drinking. So go jump in. Obviously, you're active in our Facebook group. I'd love to see it there. But also, if you haven't, go find Chris Marshall's Beer Bearings. It's a good place to talk and a good place to share. So I wasn't sure, but we got 10 questions, so that was great. We've gone about 45 minutes. I really appreciate everyone jumping in. Thank you for joining me today, and thank you for all those of you that did submit a question. Get involved in the Facebook group, become a patron, get your questions in. We'll do these shows periodically. I probably won't do this tonight, but I will go into the show notes sometime in the next couple of days and put timestamps for each question, so you can hear the answers and kind of see the questions there. Again, that'll be at beyondbourbonst.com/118. You can also find discount codes from our sponsors and partners and a link to become a patron supporter or Patreon supporter. Again, we want to get to 100. That's our first goal. And then we'll do something that everyone, regardless of whether you contributed $1 or $5, $10, $25 or more a month, we'll get to take part in, because we have tiers and we'll refine that as we go. But I also want there to be things for everyone. And when we reach goals, the whole community gets to enjoy it. And I should also mention, look, if you can't do that, you can't afford it, you don't want to do that, we're going to keep producing this podcast and keep producing free content in the Facebook group. So we'll always do that. But I certainly appreciate it if you can spare the cost of a beer or a cup of coffee and want to become a Patreon supporter.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.